The angle I'm taking with this talk is I'm going to show you some soil moisture data, and we're going to try to infer what the soil looks like based on the soil moisture data. This is based on TDRs that we've installed in pits, so it's kind of a cheat because we actually know what the soils look like, but hopefully I can show you where we're going with this. So as Henry said, this work was performed at the Living Filter. It's a waste treatment facility at Penn State University. All of the water at Penn State is filtered and treated, and then it's irrigated on these two sites outside of town. One is a forested site and one's a crop site. This has been going on for quite a while, over 40 years. The nice thing about it from a hydrological standpoint is that the irrigation is applied very uniformly in 12-hour irrigation bursts, uniform application, and it happens throughout the year. This figure here on the right, you can see what it looks like when they irrigate in the middle of the winter. It kind of turns into ice everywhere, but it does melt, and we get these nice irrigation pulses throughout the year. We've been monitoring the soil moisture there for about 2 years, so since two falls ago. We're measuring soil moisture at two depths using the Decagon 5TE soil moisture probes at 5 centimeters and 90 centimeters. And we're measuring at a very high interval rate. So every 2 minutes, we're taking measurements. So we've got a very high resolution soil moisture data at these sites. And I'm going to show you data from two of the sites. One is a crop site, irrigated site, and one is a forested site where they're also applying irrigation. So what they tend to do is they irrigate the crop sites when they need it. And when they don't, the overflow goes into these forested sites. The plan for this talk is I'm going to show you three sets of analysis I did with this data, and I'm going to try to give it to you without judgment and just show you the data, and at the end we'll kind of make some conclusions based on the data on the soil properties, okay? And the goal being to characterize the soil just based on these soil moisture data. I'm going to focus just on the irrigation events, so I'm not looking at any natural storm events, and the irrigation events are really easy to tell. So here I've got two sites. This is about the same time of the year. I'll show you a couple more, and sometimes it's a different year, but the same day of year. What we generally see is irrigation begins, and we get an increase in soil moisture, and then a relatively flat plateau. Irrigation stops. These gray bars are very rough estimates. Irrigation probably stopped right around here, and we see a recession. So the shallow is in red, the deep probe is in black. At the forested site, you see the shallow one, a big increase, and then a recession. And the deep probe, you see a much smaller increase, much longer plateau, and then a very small recession. And this looks like a weird glitch in the probe, but it looks like this, and I'll show you. It looks like this for every event. The crop site's a little more uniform, where you see, again, a similar shallow response and a deep response that looks more like the shallow response. There's a delay, of course. So here's another event, and again, you see this smaller increase with the deep one in the forested site and a small, weird-looking recession. And again, okay? So just from looking at these three time series, and we've actually got 40, 50, 60 of these irrigation events at these sites, we see a couple patterns between the forested and the crop sites. So at the forested site, we see a smaller soil moisture increase with depth irrigation and a delayed deep recession, right? This deep recession right here. At the crop site, we see a more uniform peak. Well, these two, this one looks more uniform, but in general, the crop site, the plateau is a bit flatter. And you get a rapid initial recession in the deep probes. So the first thing I'll look at is the response velocity. And if we go back, what I'm looking at here is the velocity that the time difference between the initial rise in the shallow probe and the initial rise in the deep probe, okay? Which I'm calling the response velocity. It's the velocity of initial response. And rather than plot velocity, I'm going to plot time to initial rise. And here's the cropped, and here's the forested sites. And you can see that the distributions aren't enormously different between the two. Here's kind of a perspective on what these velocities look like. The probes are 85 centimeters apart, so a time a time of initial rise difference of about 85 minutes is about 1 centimeter per minute, so on. We took soil cores and measured the KSAT in the lab, and what we got was a values right around here for the crop site and a value right around here for the forested site. So in both cases, we're seeing velocities out in the field faster than the measured KSAT in the lab, which isn't too surprising. KSAT and velocities tend to scale up when you go out into the field. But it is rapid flow. Right. So the second thing I looked at was the increase in volumetric water content due to irrigation. And what that is the difference between this initial value here and the peak value here. Okay? We get a plot that looks like this. The blue dots, sorry, I changed the color scheme. The blue dots are the 5 centimeter probes, the shallow probes, and the red dots are the 90 centimeter, the deep probes. And this dark line here shows a 1-to-1 relationship. Okay? So what this plot is showing is that this is the peak water content, and this is the initial water content. So initial peak plateau. So at the forested site, we get a 1-to-1 relationship. If the initial volumetric water content increases by 5% from storm to storm, then the peak also increases by 5%. If we look at the crop site, we don't see the relationship quite as well. And I'll note here that the axes are different. So the distribution of peak and initial water contents is much smaller here than at the forested site. Someone outside agrees with me. Okay, to summarize this slide, the peak water content seems to be a function of the initial water content, and it's just offset. And at the crop site, the peak water content is less variable, and it doesn't seem to be a function of the initial water content. So the final set of analyses I'm doing is looking at the recessions. So here I've taken my 40 or 50 irrigation events at the crop site, and I've line them up so that the recession begins at the same time. Okay, so this time here now is a recession time rather than an absolute time. Okay, and then looking at this, I thought, well, the difference between, say, this line here and this line here, the soils are the same, the water application is the same. The difference here should be something like evaporation or an evaporation effect, right? So here we've got a plot of the change in volumetric water content after 24 hours between this uppermost one and the lowermost one, or the uppermost one in each subsequent irrigation event. Sorry. And I've got plotted up against the day of year. So this is January 1st. That also is January 1st. And what you see is a seasonal pattern in this change in volumetric water content, which is what you'd expect, right? As the growing season goes on, evaporation increases, and these recessions get steeper, okay? So this makes sense to me. You see it more in the shallow than in the deep, and these are they're planting corn, that sort of thing, so you'd expect that most of the evaporation is near the surface. Right. So I repeated this at the forested site, hoping to see a similar pattern. Okay, you'll remember that the recessions were very small for the deep probe, and so if you look at the axis here on the deep one, it's a very small axis, so I'm not expecting to see much with the deep one. But the shallow one, we get some nice recessions here, and it looks awful to me. It doesn't look the same, right? You don't see, maybe if you really wanted to see it, you could see a seasonal pattern like that, but I don't. So it appears that there's something masking the signal in the deep. So what could be masking the signal? So here I'll show you this again. And different from the crop one, to me it looks like they're all parallel now, right? So if we look at this a different way, instead of plotting up volumetric water content versus time, I'm plotting up the change in volumetric water content with time, so the slope of this curve, versus the volumetric water content. Okay? And you can see that all these lines seem to be parallel. And what that indicates to me is that the recession is the same each time, it's just the residual water content has changed. Right? So all these recession curves are just getting moved up and down. And it turns out that what happens is initial water content, or what's happening is the residual water content is changing with the season. Okay? So, to summarize, at the forested site, we get a small deep response to irrigation. We're getting a rapid signal transfer. The peak water content, it seems to be a function of the initial water content. And the recession analysis is showing that this residual water content, or the initial water content, is varying throughout the year. At the crop site, we're also seeing a rapid signal. And the peak or plateau of volumetric water content doesn't seem to be a function of the initial volumetric water content. And finally, the shallow soil recession seems to be well correlated with seasonal ET demand. Okay? So what does this mean in terms of pedology? And here's where I'll go out on a limb and give you a perceptual model of the two sites. Okay? So since we've got a rapid signal transfer, and it's much faster than, say, the Carcel and Parrish estimates of soil hydraulic conductivity for these soils, which are silty clay loams and silty loams. Okay? So I think that indicates that it's a structured soil, which is not too surprising. All soils are structured. So I think that there's a structure to the soil. Since the peak volumetric water content is less variable at the forested site than at the forested site, I think that there's rapid diffusion of water from the macropores into these peds. Okay? So I'm hypothesizing that the peds are actually small, right? So water can easily get in and out of them and into the centers of them, that sort of thing. And this might make sense when I show you the next one. And the fact that the recession rate is well correlated with ET demand, it indicates to me that ET is evenly distributed through the soil. So these probes are reading this ET signal inside the peds as well as out in the macropores. If we look at the forested site, on the other hand, so this small deep recession to irrigation, to me that indicates that perhaps it's rocky where that probe is. You can have a rock right next to a soil moisture probe, and it'll reduce the volumetric water content that can change, right? The rapid signal transfer, to me, again, indicates that the soil is structured. And the fact that this peak volumetric water content is a function of the initial volumetric water content, as well as this recession analysis, indicates to me that the peds in this system are large. So you've got large peds that take a lot of time for the water to transfer in and out. So during evaporation, when the diffusion rate is low, water can be taken out of the large peds, and which would change the apparent residual water content. But during events, the water moves and stays just in the mobile domain and doesn't tend to move in and out. So during events, our volumetric water content sensor won't see water moving in and out of the peds, and that's why the residual water content will change seasonally. I don't know that I explained that very well. But so that's the end of the story. I invite questions. If we have time.
Very good. Yeah, we do have a little bit of time. So I do have just one or two quick questions.
Where would you use such an approach, sort of the backwards approach to figuring out the soil, or why did you go about the study in this way?
Why did we go about? Well. That is part of the reason. I come from a hydrology background, so it makes more sense to me to look at soil moisture data and use that. But I was discussing earlier with someone that sometimes you do take soil moisture measurements without having dug in a pit, right? There's methods where you auger holes and you don't get a chance to look at the soil,
right? Right. I
assume you were. Oh, yeah, that should have been another slide. So when we in the analysis of the soils when we dug the pits, we did see smaller peds in the crop soil, which you'd expect because it's a plowed soil, right? And so that part of it does seem to be correct.
Were there texture differences?
They're very slight. I think it's a silty clay loam and a silt loam.
Just a quick question.
Yeah. I thought a little. I had a little. tough time with the idea that it's next to a rock. I mean, if you had like 40% water in that rock, your deep one in the forest?
Is it that high?
I don't know. Wouldn't it? All right, 38. It's pretty wet for a rock.
Yeah, that's true. That part of it was hard for me to get my head around, why the change was so small.
Well, you're only looking at 3 days.
Well, the increase was small too, though.
Yeah.
I mean, the increase to me seemed...